to the catch one decisions by the Institute of Economic Development.
Good morning, my name is Paul Derbyshire. I'm currently the acting general manager at Brandworth Casino near town.
Morning, Jeff. My name is Alan Scott from the Goldfish Gaming Group.
And
Good morning, everybody. My name is Duncan Pollock. I represent your gaming technology system service provider to land-based casinos.
Good morning, my name is Jonathan Parton. I represent SportPest as a consultant chair.
Good morning, Bruno Evans, with the Cape Valley Investment Board.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Sean Coleman, the CEO of the South African Bookmakers Association.
Good morning, everyone. I'm the to allow the Minister of Treasury also to
do have the very introduction, but it's important as before people speak that it just indicated the name and surname. And it is again the organization that they are appreciating. We make provision for translation services for people able to speak in their own language. We will get a recording, a translated recording. So, I'm now going to hand over to the Department of Trade and Industry, Mr. Mashima Aiki. Welcome.
Good morning once again. I was advised that I should try to minimize time on the presentation. Then I will try to do so. So I'm going to start if you have the copy of the presentation on my page. Slide 9 is the one that gives you the examples producing the bill. Most of our stakeholders will notice that it has actually been issued. When we went to the traditional parliament, the issue of time was the factor that led to. The preamble is that this bill will seek to establish the national building regulator that will be led by the CEO and the accounting officer. It will provide for potential and local meetings. It will empower the national building policy council to make final decisions at the second sitting with the majority of members present. And it will extend the national central electronic monitoring system to other modes of gambling. And will also enhance the powers of the national inspectorate so as to check illegal gambling activity. And the other factor is it will delete certain definitions and provide for the transitional arrangement. The bill currently will amend the interpretation provisions, one of which will empower the national gambling regulator to keep a register of unlawful gambling operators. The purpose is to ensure that when these people want to apply for a legitimate license, they are not going to get it for a period of 5 years after that. So this is one factor, but the issue of register is aligned to the fact that there are criminal sanctions in the Act. So, to prosecute and find these operators that operate without license. So it's not a standalone provision. And the other one is the excluded persons, people who exclude themselves or are excluded from gambling, must also be removed from the list of registered, and from the list of mailing lists that the operators have, so that they don't receive promotions from the gambling outlet while they are during the period of their exclusion. And the next one is to change the provision regarding unlawful winnings to require now that the winnings be forfeited to the National Gambling Regulator. This is the body that will replace the National. systems that collect information from gambling devices in the country, mostly ATMs currently. And this will be extended to casino, bingo, betting, to be also collected directly by the National Gambling Regulator. We will actually, you know, this is a very important aspect for us to determine how much has been collected and what taxes are there. And we want our regulator to be directly controlling that. Currently, the practice is that the operators are operating this system outside the limited transmission space, and they collect information and give it to provinces, which will end up being collated by the National Gambling Board. But we want our regulator to directly consolidate that information and accept the knowledge of exactly where that information comes from. And this will assist us to be sure that this is exactly the work of the industry in the country. And the next one is the issue of the National Gambling Policy Council. They've been struggling to achieve quorum, most of the time in their meetings. And this forum is very important to us in regulating gambling in the country. We cannot actually dispense with it. In 1996, when the National Gambling Act was introduced, it didn't have a provision that creates this forum. But it was seen to be very important that in 2004, the Act was overhauled, and amongst others, this forum was introduced to ensure that there is policy coordination nationally. Otherwise, gambling with nine national governments, you will have a lot of conflict. And that is why this forum is important. It has actually been struggling with the issue of forum for a number of years. And as a result, we have actually not been able to benefit from the issues of policies that have to be resolved. There has been a lot of conflict issues as a result. This was discussed in a number of their meetings, the National Gambling Policy Council, and the even members there agreed that we need to have this as a way of dealing with the lack of quorum, because we will go to a meeting and then on that day, the meeting will have to be cancelled because there is no quorum. Whereas when we organize these meetings, we actually establish the quorum before the day is confirmed. So, currently, it's required that we need at least 5 members of the executive council, which is MEC, in your case, which is minister. They must actually support a resolution at the policy council, which is the proper forum actually, for it to be binding. But we are now proposing that, given the issue of the challenge, if the first meeting does not have a quorum, in the next meeting, the majority of members present with ministers will have to adopt a resolution that will be able to be binding to every board. As indicated, this is a result of the fact that the Constitution actually conferred concurrent competence between national and provinces in Schedule 4. And to deal with this, we had to get the National Gambling Policy Council members. Well, in order to move forward, the proposal is that we should have members in attendance for the next meeting, majority of them actually adopting resolution for them. We have actually been, like I've indicated, been struggling because in 2018 to 2018, we only had 2 college meetings, and that is exactly the struggle that we have to go through. Some meetings have to be sitting without quorum, and some were actually cancelled at the venue while we have already incurred the cost of constituting that meeting, taking a venue and everything. And people have traveled to that from all over the country to attend that meeting. And the next one is amendment of Section 64, establishing the National Gambling Regulator as a public entity and a juristic person. This body will be led by a chief executive officer. There will be no board structure to manage the National Gambling Regulator. The National Gambling Regulator will also be empowered to collect and retain monetary fee in management of the National Central Electronic Monitoring System for all modes of gambling. And the CEO that will be appointed will be eligible for appointment for a period of 5 years, which can be renewed for another 5 years. The CEO will be responsible for appointment of staff, management of the NGR resources, and any delegation will account to the minister. As indicated, the bill will be removing the concept of the board. We, at national level, don't have to deal with licensing issues, and that is exactly why, from that level, the board is a very unnecessary structure. It's adding unnecessary bureaucracy for the National Gambling Board to function effectively, and we have seen the results of that for the period that we have had an administrator with the board removed, that they have been able to perform efficiently without the board structure. This is an approach that the Department of Trade and Industry has adopted with a number of its agencies, the National Consumer Commission, the National Credit Regulator, the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications, and others, that we have adopted this model. We no longer have board structures in those agencies, then we are only led by a CEO or a commissioner for that matter. And the other one is the amendment of section clause 60, clause 32, which is section 66, capital A, which will empower the National Gambling Regulator to work collaboratively with government departments and institutions responsible for gambling related matters. And they can actually enter into working agreements with such institutions and establish forums for those people. And the next one is extension of section 76, capital A. This will empower our national gambling inspector to be able to work in the provinces, either with the provincial inspectors or without them. There are instances where the provincial inspectors are not available, and as a result, the national inspectors' functions will be hindered. They will not be able to go and conduct their oversight work, which also includes measures to deal with illegal gambling in the country, which is a problem actually, and it actually left on our licensed operators who have to compete with these people that are operating without paying taxes and any other obligatory fees that they have to comply with. So the National Inspectorate will also additionally be empowered to serve notice to stop operating to the illegal operators while investigations are pending, litigation and prosecution is pending. This will also include powers to serve land trusts with notices that you are actually working with an illegal operator here, and then you need to start taking measures to terminate the lease agreement because you are going to be taken to be an accomplice to this crime of an illegal operation. This will also include notifying the financial institutions and giving banks to also stop financial transactions related to illegal gambling. And this will have to be done in compliance with the Financial Intelligence Center Act, ensuring that payments are not processed for illegal gambling operations. Also, the bill will also amend any provision in the Act currently that refers to the trade board, and it will replace it with either the CEO or National Gambling Regulator, wherever the change will be necessary for that. And in addition, the minister is empowered under section 87 to make regulations. There is an addition that the minister should also be empowered to set the criteria that will be used by the National Gambling Regulator to observe, when considering the applications for additional limited payout machines from provinces. We believe that this will be a buffer that will create facility for provincial licensing authorities in terms of ensuring fairness, that the considerations are those that have been agreed with, because the regulations will be consulted with the public and everybody. So it will be an agreed flow as that. And this is basically for the transitional provisions will actually also add that the National Gambling Regulator will absorb all employees of the National Gambling Board as a going concern. And this will include immovable, movable assets, finance, administration, that sort of contractual obligation, and the any liabilities of the National Gambling Board will be that of the National Gambling Regulator going forward. I think I have summarized.
Thank you very much. I think the presentation in detail was submitted and discussed with the committee. The committee has raised a number of concerns, and I think we just probably got to feed in the course of the public hearing to give the committee an opportunity to respond to that on what they've heard now. I think what I've heard more in detail now. That the establishment of the regulator will actually and the CEO was outcome was that it will almost appear that it will become another entity, a smaller department, and taking all the staff and closed assets that is now set. And we wanted to know what is the costing of that. It is very much the costing, and I think we must do like that also. And then I think the other issue we raised was the quota. You know, at the moment, we want national ministers to take responsibility for making sure CBCs appoint attend that national council. So to again say that whoever is at the next meeting, one or two, three MCs, then take the decision is not a good, well, I think they force. If you're in a democratic state, and a government, and you would like to follow democratic decisions. And so once you refer back to one man making a decision, one minister or MC to make a decision, if the others excuse themselves at the next meeting, as you brought up, that was a big concern, and there were other concerns as well. But I'm handing over to the members just to put the clarity member this and that is a part of the thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't repeat the issues that I raised last time, but more new issues that we picked up today. And one of the issues that was not mentioned at the meeting on the 13th when we made this presentation was that there was legislation approved by the National Assembly in 2008. That's what I picked up now. We never referred to that, and it was never enacted, never signed off by the President. I would just like to understand how that influenced this piece of legislation, because that's a very important starting point. If you say it's not going to be enacted, then I will say, well, let's put everything on hold, because I see that as a major building block of what we actually do or not do. Yeah, that's the first one. The second one, I did ask you if you can maybe go back and look at that quorum issue, and you will recall that, and that's why I raise it again here, because I'm not trying to repeat what I said then. But as I told you, I believe that's not constitutional and it's not going to fly, because the first meeting there can be no quorum, and at the second meeting there could be two people, maybe the minister and one MEC. And as I explained to you, this is really to get the input of provincial institutions as well, like provincial government. So that is a very important one. And my comment is still, did you reapply your mind to that? If the province is not important, and you might think that way, then I would rather go a route like give the authority to the minister to make regulations or something like that. But as I explained to you, you have a problem with the board, because there's no forums for the board and the board couldn't function. So you have to put the board under administration. And then the next point that you do is now you look at the National Gambling Policy Council. It's also not functioning, and now you want to lift the quorum. So it's like, as I explained, it's like a bit of a political problem that we're trying to fix now in a technical way. And so that was the second issue that I raised. And you recall, I raised the third one, and that was the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, who actually said being in order as it was not discussed specifically in their certification report, and you did commit that you will go back on that one and just again speak to the Chief State Law Advisors around that issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The name is Brian Arumugam. I'm Senior Manager of Corporate Governance at National Labour Board.
My name is Cheryl Jane Patiwa, Senior Manager at National Labour Board. Okay.
Can I ask a question? Just want to clarify the status of the board, because you have an administrator, and doesn't mean that, the board members or officials of the board currently serve on the administration. This one for all the important, this one to carry by that.
Thank you, Chair. Member Ages raised the concerns that they raised the last meeting. And I think it says the last meeting, the last legislative aid. I think this is what they're trying to fix. Or somebody's up to attend the meeting, so that's the legislation is like this. Ensure they attend the meeting. One of the things that's been put from the Jefferson race was first the costing of this exercise. Now, I did it as an administrator here. Can you tell us what is the costing of this new exercise? Then secondly, the Ramaphosa report and the rest of the center, because the last time your colleague, they said to check with the minister, the superior. And I just wanted to, because you also understand the report, because in the report was any timeline, so the report was in the council. Was the report done in June 2017 and completed 6 months later in December 2017? That's a certain order. And then there are some key recommendations in the report. So, Jefferson, you appoint somebody to guide the issues and they make recommendations on page 116 particularly. And I'm going to read it up here. In light of the very strong statutory body, it has recommended that the NGB be transformed into the National Gambling and Lotteries Commission to create an organization with both the resources and skills space to regulate both gambling and lottery. And there's at the bottom paragraph, our option is amalgamation is not with NOB is not feasible, we need to assume the function of the NGB is the DCI. And you're fine on it, I'm sure you've read the report. But then we look at this and make a decision that we're not going to follow the advice of somebody who's given us advice. So the first thing was certainly as well, because I need to know if we spend 10,000 to ask somebody for advice, we didn't take advice, we spent $1 million. So we need to understand why. And then, with regards to the actual legislation, because we need to legislate, and I can only speak for the Parliament because I serve in the English Parliament, but I do know what's happening in National Parliament. You don't change legislation with way to, you don't do legislation easy. I don't say today I'm doing a legislation because I don't like my colleagues here to check it. Tomorrow I don't like the chief, I'm doing another piece of legislation because I don't like another chief. But this legislation, I said it before, has to be the fastest piece of legislation I have seen in my life. Not even the appropriation of land compensation has moved so far. That somebody made a decision, passed it, sent it to Parliament, documented the report from ANSAR, the National Parliament, we submitted it the day before. There's no way, and we did a lot, and I know in this country, there's no way in the world that somebody can read a full report with proper people to read that performance in which we need to do that. So it immediately raises suspicion in my view, that's my view. What is the rush for this to be done now? And yes, the parliament technically is all about legislation, they're still that way. I'm reading about legislation on dealing with serious matters in your country, social issues, health issues. So this urgency just bothers me. And I raise this with your colleague before, I'm glad the parliament can be guys today, because I'm keen to know that the minister has been budgeted for 6 months. 4 years, 4.5 years. And 6 months before elections, so this came from last 7 months, with December being, we all know from the people that in the January funding of everyone in this country, that somehow the legislation is being rushed. And it just bothers me, because if somebody does it, if you love after legislation funding you for aid, I would support you 100%. So this just bothers me. There's no technical reason for the minister to be employed, suddenly not to be rushed before the 26th. The fact that Parliament was 26 months, before the 26th month. And no one is able to give me a legitimate reason of being the administrator and the government sector to give me a legitimate reason why this legislation must be rushed. Thank you.
Thank you. The question may translate to stand over to the CBI and the board if that is responsible.
The individual rationalization was actually finalized in 2014. Maybe it is possible. But like in many other reports, we as a department, when we get recommendations like that, we also speak and analyze what it is in the report that will actually address the issues that we are dealing with. And at the moment, the decision to absorb the National Gambling Board was actually not adopted and not supported because we still wanted the agency to be, the department still wanted the agency to maintain its independence in dealing with other boards in the national as well. So it is not a given that every time there is a refresh, we will actually take everything that they are saying, because some of them we are still going to analyze and come up with a conclusion. It goes the same with the consolidation with the National Lotteries Commission. That was also not yet adopted, and I think the department might still be deliberating in terms of what would be the most appropriate step to be taken in this one. But we will note also that the constitution actually conferred concurrent competency on gambling, which excluded lottery and sports schools. And as a result, if you put the two together, you actually end up confusing a lot of things. Lottery is state owned, whereas general gambling is privately owned and regulated by state, and that's why we wanted to continue maintaining that separation for now. It might actually in the future be considered, because the things change from time to time. There is also an issue about the 2008 National Gambling Amendment Act. That act was meant to introduce interactive gambling, which is internet-based type of gambling. We did not proceed with that act. There have been a number of issues that came after it was passed. First, it was passed in 2008, which was the end of another parliament. And when the next parliament came, they actually wanted to understand better, because it was the Law Committee, how our kids will be protected from online gambling if it is to be allowed immediately. They even conducted public hearings to understand, but the public hearings were halted when they were made aware that the department itself is going to conduct the Gambling Review Commission study, which took place in 2009 and in 2010. And it was based on that because the regulations were supposed to be passed to introduce that act. And to coincide with the communication of that act, and those regulations dealing with this issue of governance. My colleagues will add on this issue because I think you were posing direct questions to them. But the issue of the governance issue, the National Gambling Regulator, the National Gambling Policy Council, the issue of the inspectorate, and other subsidiary issues, including the extension of the National Central Electronic Monitoring System to other gambling modes. These are the only parts of the bill that are currently being addressed. And that was just to deal with the fact that we actually raised the issues that are agent for us, because we really have been dealing with the issues of the administration. Yes, the bill was introduced in December, towards December, so last year, around July, August, when it came to Parliament. We have actually been dealing with a number of issues, so it's just not stationary dealing with them. But the other issue that also affected this was the parliamentary program that we also waited for them to call us that we are ready, we can bring the bill. And that actually happened to Lisa as well. So that is exactly why we ended up where we are now today. And to deal with these things, the issues that we have identified was it is really urgent to deal with the issues of the administrator, because this is dealt with in terms of the number of other governance legislation in government, not necessarily in the National Gambling Act itself. And my colleagues will then finish.
Without reflecting and without any authority, just indicator of this is how a district believes the behavior of the MECs, they weigh that when they took that decision, and that's how the provision found itself in the bill. We've also been advised, as my colleague has said, the safeguard advisory has said, it doesn't answer any constitutional imperatives, they're not of that field. But we've got a follow-up email in that respect. So we've left it like that and it's within governance principle. I think an important thing also is looking at the power of the National Gambling Policy Council. They are a consultative body, policy making body, and there's no decision that at the end of the day they will make access to maybe, for example, one particular province. It's not administrative or licensing issues that go to the policy council. I think also from our experience on the part is the fact that the work that the National Gambling Board does is to be tabled at council, and if you don't have a council that is not able to properly function, we are not able to effectively discharge our mandate. Being the national regulator, we have aerial view to ensure at all times that irrespective of each provincial gambling board's powers and what it is they administer, we always have to ensure that from a national perspective there's uniformity and consistency, and that is where we table those issues. And we were also, it's okay to also make out of the fact that I think the issue of forum should be looked at positively because it basically amounts to retaking of an issue. The issue will come once there are not enough members. It will be retabled for members to take a decision again. And it's not that also that the documentation information is not made available up front. So the MECs then consult the department and preparation is done. So I just wanted to add that to say and to impress upon the committee to say this was an issue that was decided, and even in terms of the Act, they have that power to establish their own proceedings. It's also their decision then to ensure that it's provided in the Act itself. So we are not able to take that matter any further unless legal advice, you know, have stipulated that it's unconstitutional or illegal. And then the issue regarding the urgency, the BTI each year will then table their legislative program, which gets approved. That's then to the presidency. So the gambling bill has been on the legislative program. What we are saying is, and looking at where the National Gambling Board comes in, we went under administration in 2014, I was appointed then. And in about a year, we were able to get the entity functioning efficiently. And hence my colleague makes out the case that we've been having three consecutive team audits. From the BTI perspective, our perspective, it is not an ideal situation to just perpetuate. So, as opposed to simply getting the entity out of administration, it was the opportunity for the BTI then to proceed, to look at various efficiencies. We just didn't look at the fact that perhaps there was a challenge with the board members. But we looked at also internal efficiencies. We have to consider which is the best governance model to effectively implement our mandate. And we've also indicated in Parliament to say there's quite a difference between the National Gambling Board or the future regulator in Zimbabwe and a provincial gambling board. To begin with, the minister is the only one who has the authority to set the maximum number of licenses, and then he also determines through legislation and consultation then which gambling will get regulated in the Republic. From there, we are then mandated to ensure that those principles of each gambling board then effectively functions within the confinement of those principles. At the same time, recognizing that the concurrent legislative consequences, they then can develop legislation, how they are going to license, and that's how they then fit in. So the issue of conversion from board to regulator was a review of all these issues and efficiencies we've been looked at. And then also we've been reporting certain experiences we've been having where in my office as administrator, we have, for example, the South African Bookmakers Association, a stakeholder here present today, where the CA listened to us saying that you've got no right to write to the provincial gambling board and direct them, for example, what to do. And that's just a good example. It ended up in court on a particular situation because the national regulator is advising provincial regulators to stay within the regulatory framework. You know, that is shared with operators, and then they write to us. So that's something they've reported to the minister to say, I think, in terms of the regulatory framework, if this is what they're supposed to do, you know, and you have an external stakeholder who is licensed of the view that actually we operate in a federalism state as opposed to a democratic and unitary state. We have challenges. So there are various aspects, even for experience, that got us to this point. We've had also court challenges where, yet again, operators, there's been of the view that an administrator can't take decisions regarding the functioning, even simple PFMA procurement decisions regarding the functioning of the National Gambling Board. And that's also, yet again, you know, advice to say, because the minister and the department have got to the point that they are looking at various models that would enhance efficiency and even assist him to better interact and work with the entity. We also could draw from experience, and you know, that is something that no one can then take away. So I just wanted to further explain that it's not only from the detail perspective or policy perspective, but even from an implementation perspective. And we are saying that, you know, since the administrator has been in office so long, the entity has gotten to the point where, in terms of this model, where we have a single individual, but yet again, if you see in terms of the bill, that is supported by a deputy CEO, the mandate is such that there's no decision that myself as an administrator, or even the future CEO or deputy CEO, would be able to overturn a decision of any gambling board as has been reported in various public comments. That is not the case if one is to consider the provisions of the bill. So basically, that is the case we make out. In terms of the piecemeal approach, we have been in Parliament with the DPI, and in terms of the Constitution, Parliament has that authority to amend any piece of legislation when it's been introduced, or rather when the National Assembly is directed by the Portfolio Committee to consider it. So we also have to respect, and the advice was within the time left on the legislative program, you better off dealing with your governance issues and technical amendments, and the more substantive issues will be dealt with in the next parliament. What we had full view of was stakeholders' comments, where it was anticipated and envisaged at the end of the day that we would not get to finality if the technical amendments dealing with governance and the most substantive provisions that impact licensees and provinces were merged, we would never get to it. Then the entity would continue remaining under administration, and it is a state we're trying to get out of. So that was the prerogative of the portfolio committee to do that, and it has been accepted on that basis, introduced to the National Council of Provinces, but not able to argue And the legislative program was approved at the beginning of the year, so that's the one that's the issue. And then there was a question also whether the officials in the organization, of course, the administrator, they actually do. So our vested in authority in terms of section, the National Gambling Act in terms of section 49 of the TFMA. So on that basis, then the all officials report to myself as administrator. And then effectively from 2014, we haven't had any board members in place. So I've been reporting directly to the minister. So all we're saying is we're not saying that a board would not work. The National Gambling Board has had board members, but what we're saying, learning from experience where we are, being able to prove at the end of the day that looking at efficiencies, internal, external, implementation of the mandate is a model that can work. So that's basically why also the consideration for that model. And then I just wanted to also expand on the issue of Anthem. Most stakeholders haven't understood us, why the intention is to extend Anthem to other modes of gambling. Information also we've been trying to share with each provincial legislature for women giving the opportunity. So what we've observed as a national regulator over time is in various modes of gambling, we know and we respect the fact that, for example, in the Western Cape, they would allow the casino industry or the betting industry or the gambling industry to ensure that, for example, for proper financial transaction recording, record keeping, they can have their own system which will monitor gambling transactions, because then the provincial gambling board is able to link to that system, basically access, and then establish how much tax based on gross gambling revenue should be imposed on the operator. And from the statistics we provided in the presentation, if you look at it, actually nationally, all provincial gambling boards collect 10% of gross gambling revenue that all participants in the province make. And for us, it's simply advice to be able to say that, 10% versus other jurisdictions where they impose more nationally, perhaps we could do more. And I think that also the underlying factor and what lies behind this is financial transactions. Can we actually say, another question we pose, can we actually say they are effectively collecting all the tax or levy if they are reliant only on the person system whom they are regulating? It is not an ideal state to be in as a regulator. What sentence will then give national and provincial regulators is information which we rely on to impose tax, which would be accurate. We have tax directly to the machines, or for example, where they are machines. I'm not a technical person, my colleague is here, he can explain in other modes where they are not machines how that can be done. But what we are saying is, but why should a national and provincial regulator in those modes of gambling that we're relying on the operating system, only rely on the operating system, you do need a third party verification or confirmation for completeness. Even international auditing standards require you to do that. And that's what we are saying. We're trying to strengthen regulation, and we see no problem doing that. We have FICA compliance that we have to adhere to and ensure all provincial gambling boards are listed as accountable institutions in terms of FICA. They have to report financial transactions, for example, that are unscrupulous. Can we safely say, and no accusation to operators, but in our own right as regulators under our control, can we safely say we've collected all the revenue we should be? Can we safely say that we have full view of all the financial transactions that are happening in the gambling industry? The question remains unanswered because we don't have an independent system. And then on the inspectory, it's another case again that we're making, and we yet again also drew from the example with the Bookmakers Association, where in terms of the law currently, dog racing is illegal. We're making out the case that any province who has licensed dog racing refrains from doing that. That was shared with the operator challenge that took us. And if we had powers as the national inspector to move in and stop an activity that contravenes the National Gambling Act, we would have done that. We were not able to do that because the National Inspectorate only has the powers to operate without the provincial inspector when it is going to inspect a provincial gambling board office. However, if we are to enforce anything related to LICC, we will need the permission of the provincial gambling board. We couldn't do that because that respective provincial gambling board had license. And that's the situation we found ourselves in. So that's basically another rationale why, if you look at that holistically, we're saying it contributes to us becoming a regulator and to ensure we could effectively do the basics, because the responsibility is on ourselves to ensure that from a national perspective, you know, we ensure that there's effective regulation of gambling. So, Jefferson, thank you for the opportunity. I hope I've been successful to what we're excited to ask.
Yes, we'd like to move on, but any final follow-up?
Okay. And then Martin, did you respond to this one? May I just on the quarter issue? Are you the first quarter mark or the meeting? You didn't have a quarter before this before you. So I can no other reason of the thing to regular behavior. Not only for the same people that didn't attend the meeting before you, it's not time for them to say we're all in the season that you didn't attend the meeting before you. Suddenly the quarter said it, suddenly the quarter said it. I don't know how long they're meeting. On the first thing, and then on the review, what you mentioned, there was a review done. There was a review done by, we got a report, but when we see your review, it says your way is the best way to go. You mentioned the word implementation, so you use the subject to contact one of them. Where do you see the model that you implement, which is a document that says, what if the result that you say, this report by the consultant is not working. So they're not doing our experience. Give us here the report, what have you done? Come to that conclusion that your view, if your this is taking best on the
video. And I just on the film, I think we've shared it on our concern with DGI and we want to share with USA Consent as well. Currently in NQP, there must be 5 provinces out of 9 to make a democratic decision in the consultancy. So you currently have 9 provinces coming to a meeting. There's no quorum of 5. The next meeting, only 1 or 2 may turn up as member interested. And then you can allow the personal agenda to be approved if we go to 8 hours. The quorum is totally flexible. You know, if you say 3, you could have argued. I think if the minister then come in and take charge of that, regulating some responsibility, if it's with the minister, and this was one person, one MEC, one minister, but that's why we're asking you to think about it in terms of that. Ultimately, we represent your constituencies, provinces, but we want to make sure that that doesn't become a one-person show. For some reason, 8 provinces can't pick and 1 province picks, and then that decision will go through what we decided to do.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of review, procedurally, the amendment legislation is formed by policy, and I think the vision in terms of where the movement towards or the approach that the department has taken, they did consult for the national gambling policy And we haven't deviated from the national government policy of 2016. These amendments are informed by the national government policy. So it wasn't a situation where we had to produce our own document. The department did have a policy position, and when we, even in terms of the act, when we experienced practical challenges to implementing the National Gambling Act, we are to report ways of such provinces to handle as the National Policy Council. So that's how the process unfolded. And then the issue on the costing, we did send written communication to the DTA. We had requested our CFO to indicate whether there will be implications. So looking at the financial projections, our revenue at this point in time, she did indicate that we will still be working more or less within the same budget. So currently our budget is, the grants we receive from the DTI is approximately just 1 million. We do raise revenue from other sources, and our expenditure so far stands at about 41 million. And then over time, because of the additional revenue we've been raising, we have been surrendering surplus. The latest surplus we surrendered was 14 million, which has then gone back to the revenue fund. So, but when we look at the amendments of the bill, there is no solution. Basically, that would require further funding. For example, I can give an example where the previous version of the bill indicated we should set up the, for example, the rehabilitation program. Currently, that's funded by the operators. That would have had huge financial implications. That provision was done away. We are looking at, for example, if it's being sectoring, it may amount to employing more staff members. And everyone is well aware at the end of the day that, you know, we have to work with other law enforcement agencies at every year. So we don't envisage huge financial implications. It could be on staffing costs, but there's nothing else in terms of the amendments where we would definitely have huge financial implications. I think those are the key concerns.
Thank you very much. I think we would like to take a tea break at 9:30, but I just wanted to give the Minister of Treasury an opportunity to, I know we will receive a written submission, but we would just to give introduction as you understand.
The role of gambling taxes in terms of provincial funding. The fact that gambling act is already being indicated is a concurrent function between national and provincial legislative competencies. And just also to put on record that we have on previous occasions provided various rounds of input in terms of this bill, and that this presentation is not intended to replace any other written position. Unfortunately, not everybody would have access to the presentation, but basically the point that we're trying to say is that provincial funding is heavily dependent on national transfers. In fact, approximately close to 95% of all our revenue comes through a transfer system, and only revenue makes up very little sources of funding. But of those sources of funding that we do are able to raise at a provincial level, obviously the most important being motor vehicle license fees and hospital patient fees, gambling taxes would be our third most important source of revenue, approximately 5 billion rand. Having said that, and I think it's very important that provinces be taken note of, that doesn't imply that provinces are chasing gambling taxes. I think far from it, actually. Rather, in the Western Cape, it's very much a considered approach in terms of the rollout of gambling and the forms of gambling that have been rolled out and the speed at which we roll out gambling. And our legislation also provides for provincial ministers to take limitations on the number of gambling providers per site. And this is obviously in addition to the national limitations already in place in terms of the number of gambling devices that can be rolled out. I'm planning to pick up specifically on the issues that have been raised on census. I'm not going to go through the slides in terms of the revenue importance of gambling factors in the state of what I wanted to say. So I'm just really going to pick up in terms of specific aspects that the shortened version of the bill refers to. And in terms of the forfeit of unlawful winnings, I know one of the concerns that the DPI did raise was in terms of the cost of collecting this revenue if you have to go for a court order. But, you know, provinces do play an important role in terms of the investigation of unlawful or illegal gambling, and the provincial legislation provides for the proceeds of illegal gambling and other unlicensed activities to be forfeited to the province. It is recommended that unlawful winnings be forfeited to the provinces and not to the National Gambling Regulator. Provincial licensing authorities are those bodies responsible for the enforcement of the conditions on licensees and to fund and treat gambling addiction. And lastly, in terms of this point on unlawful winnings, Section 77 of the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Act provides for a court order for the forfeiture of monies to the province. Then picking up in terms of which the current version of the bill places quite a large attention to in terms of the limited payout machine sector. The proposed clause and amendment to Section 18 of the Principal Act dictates that the operation of limited payout machines must be incidental to and not primary business, whilst the national regulations on the limited payout machines provide the number of factors that provincial licensing authorities need to consider when determining whether a proposed operation of an RPM is incidental to primary business. It is unclear from this prescript whether it would apply to sites B and C RPM sites, and it is recommended that the board provide greater clarity in terms of how one defines the incidental use prescript applicable to sites B and C licenses and how these may be required to vary. The other thing that we would like to raise is in terms of the determination by the National Gambling Regulator in terms of where RPM sites may be licensed and for that purpose may establish different categories of sites and different requirements in respect to such categories that need to be consulted with provincial ministers as well. In terms of the National Gambling Regulator, we have to consider applications and motivations from provincial licensing authorities for acquisition of additional RPM machines for purposes of compliance with the approved criteria. We propose that the process provides for concurrence with the responsible provincial minister before any decisions to approve the application for the rollout of additional RPMs or sites in excess of 5 machines. And our current legislation in the Western Cape does provide a provision for the provincial minister to regulate on that matter in terms of the number of machines at a site. In terms of the standard proposal for the electronic monitoring system, it's just to express the opinion that the introduction of the new system may create inefficiencies given that provinces already have existing systems in place. And what does that mean in terms of the systems that are currently in place? And the possibility of increasing the cost for industry, given that the proposed system may or may not be compatible with existing systems. So just to raise that for noting. In terms of the national inspectorate, obviously any efforts to address illegal operations are supported. But the concern is in terms of provinces already do have capacity, or at least the Western Cape province already has capacity in terms of its own inspectorate and in terms of what the provisions that the legislation currently provides for it to undertake its proposals in section 76 of the amendment may require other amendments in other parts of the legislation for such amendments to come into force, in particular section 30, 31, and 33. But we don't think there should be a blanketed approach in terms of how the functions or the collaborative basis work. I think for the effectiveness of any national service, it's very much dependent on a cooperation with provincial licensing authorities and their inspectorate powers. And as such, there needs to be, a focus on what forms of intervention are being targeted. That it be specific to a particular intervention or a particular joint operation to ensure success as such. Then in terms of just briefly with regards to the appointment of a chief executive officer, just to just a point that was previously raised, in terms of the building silence, in terms of the skill and experience that this person would be required to hold, and we feel that should be started given the importance of such a post. And it's also recommended that the minimum qualifications and experience of the CEO is stipulated in the book. With regards to the forum issue of meeting the forum, we certainly find it problematic where if a matter is to stand over, that given the complexity of policy formulation around gambling matters, and given its multifaceted nature, limiting such decision making to, in essence, and I don't know if my arithmetic is correct, to one province or possibly two provinces to make such important decisions, I think it doesn't give the necessary attention that gambling matters, I think, deserve. And we feel that it's still incumbent that other mechanisms of addressing the lack of forum should be explored.
Thank you very much, and then do a full session with the next day conference.